Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reinhard Wolf, and this is Red Ice Radio. Since Henrik and Lana are traveling to Sweden for the Identitarian Ideas Conference, they asked me to guest host the show in their absence, and I was more than happy to oblige. Our guest for today is Hunter Wallace. Hunter runs Occidental Descent and is the news editor at altright.com. We'll be discussing the recent Milo controversy, Trump's comments about Sweden, the future of America, and much more. Hello, Hunter. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Reinhard?
Doing quite well, thank you. Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved with nationalist politics?
Okay. I'm from central South Alabama. I grew up in a very racially diverse area. When I was in college, a bunch of illegal aliens started moving into my area to work at a local chicken plant, and I became interested in immigration. And that's how I came across Pat Buchanan. I read his book, The Death of the West, which talked about immigration and changing racial demographics and generally the decline of Western civilization in general. And from there, I found Stormfront and white nationalism. And for about 4 or 5 years, I ran a V-Bulletin forum from about 2001 until 2006. And then I started my own blog, OccidentalDescent.com. And I've been involved with that ever since. And recently I started working with my friend Richard Spencer at altright.com. So
awesome. Yeah, I've been reading a lot of your articles over at altright.com. And obviously, you know, we have Red Ice material over there as well. Yeah, and I've been very impressed by, you know, your ability to kind of offer commentary on all of these issues from a, you know, a right-wing perspective. So I noticed that you have been writing about the whole Milo fiasco. So let's just hop right into that and talk about Milo's fall from grace.
Okay.
In the past week, he was disinvited from CPAC. He resigned as Breitbart's editor-in-chief and even had his book deal canceled. The accusations are, of course, that he supports pederasty, and this is based off of his own words. So what are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, you know, we really have got into it with the alt-light, as they're called, going all the way back to the aftermath of the, what was it called, the Heilgate fiasco at the API conference. And then there was this huge debate in the run-up to the Deplorable, in which, you know, Milo was invited to be the star of Deplorable, as it was called. And, you know, Baked Alaska was disinvited, and Richard was disinvited. And basically, the whole long and short of it was that at the Deplorable, that anyone who was a homosexual or into stuff like that was going to be, mainstream now. But they were going to draw the line at white identity politics or people who are racially conscious whites. And, you know, so they banned Pepe there. They banned the alt-right there. And, you know, I said at the time, I wrote a few things about Milo. And, you know, I had seen all his videos that had been circulating on the internet. It was a number of things. It was the whole bloodbath incident, the speech he gave at the RNC, which, you know, he had twinks for Trump posters.
Right. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
But most famously, the you know, the videos where he suggested that men having sex with teenage boys was okay. I saw all that I saw one of the major video, the Joe Rogan interview, and I wrote about it, and it was on New Year's Eve. And on New Year's Eve, I made a prediction that Milo, because of that issue, would go up in flames like the Hindenburg. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So I've kind of predicted it all.
Nice. Yeah, not terribly surprising that someone like Milo, you know, a degenerate homosexual, frankly, is, you know, would wind up getting himself in trouble based on his, deviant behavior and so forth. I think one thing that a lot of people are kind of surprised by all of this, but I think anyone that's been maybe a little more traditional and on the right, the real right, that is, and people who are a little more critical about homosexuality understand that pederasty is actually pretty commonplace within the gay community, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it's just like the alt-right, you know, intentionally set out to normalize this.
Right.
And it wasn't just Milo. He's the most obvious example. There are a lot of people who are on that issue. I know that McInnes has said he's accepting of, I believe, gay couples. He wants, that's allowed in the Proud Boys.
Right.
As he calls it. And then I read an article where Lauren Southern had, suggested that, or someone was saying in an article that she was actually had transitioned into a male or something legally in Canada. And that was new to me. And I was shocked. And then the article went on and talked about at the deplorable that same-sex interactions seem to be, mainstream, and that's what was common there. It was more common at the deplorable to see like same sex interactions than heterosexuals interact. I thought I was like, what? It's like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And oh god, I forgot where I was going with this. But long story short is that And then the worst was this other kid who was associated with Milo. And his name was Milo, or however you want to say it. His name is Lucian Wintrich, and he's the one who's behind Twinks for Trump, and he became a White House correspondent for Gateway Pundit, so he got a good deal,
yep,
out of support for Trump, and so they mainstreamed this, and now they act like it's the deep state that's trying to take out Milo, and it's like, no, he's the one. He went out and boasted about this for years and became even, as me and Richard had noticed, it had become even more and more flamboyant about it. He was becoming, by the end, a Liberace figure with Ben right. Shapiro's values. So, and I predicted that he was going to clash at some point
mm-hmm.
with the, more religious conservatives, the evangelical community.
Right.
And it was only a matter of time. And it's not really surprising that this was the end.
especially for us in the alt-right, it was really just a matter of time. Frankly, I thought he was going to go down through some kind of substance abuse scandal. There's been a lot of rumors that that I'm inclined to believe, by the way, that he, uses cocaine and, he lives a very lavish lifestyle. Who knows what goes on the dangerous faggot bus? I'd rather not know, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's other forms of degeneracy, such as drug use going on in there. But I think obviously going back to what you said about McInnes, obviously he staged that publicity stunt wherein he and Milo kissed at I forget where it was. Was it there?
It was in Orlando.
Oh, that's right. Right. Very fitting. And it's interesting. Gavin McInnes has, he's even kind of backtracked, stepped, maybe distanced himself a little bit from Milo. He said something about the dark side of homosexuality. So maybe this is proving to be somewhat of a red pill. Maybe this is going to get people to think a little more critically about homosexuality mm-hmm. within the alt-light. Frankly, I'm not particularly optimistic in that regard. I think what's most likely is that people who were maybe, liked a lot of what Milo had to say, but were a little disgusted by his vulgar rhetoric and the way he carries himself. I think those people are more likely to come to the alt-right rather than, the leading figures within the alt-light doing so. But one other thing I wanted to touch on is the whole notion that there is a deep state conspiracy to take out Milo. I don't think that it's really the deep state. I mean, because the deep state is, these unelected bureaucracies, these spy agencies and so forth. I don't think the NSA or the CIA was, set Milo up for all of this. I think it'd be good to talk about what actually happened.
Okay.
What happened, for anyone who didn't know, is that seemingly overnight, this became a scandal. These old videos, some of them as old, were released, they've been around for over a year. Some of these videos of Milo, talking about pederasty in approving ways, he appeared on the Gavin McInnes show. He did something with The Amazing Atheist and so forth. But these videos, the point is these videos have been around for a while, and they suddenly, quote unquote, surfaced overnight. So I do think that this, that there was a coordinated, premeditated attack on Milo, done not by, you know, the NSA and the CIA, but rather by the conservative establishment, and, you know, with, undoubtedly with the leftist media involved too. Frankly, just because Milo, I think, is possibly the first person to be simultaneously hated by, you know, the extreme far right in America, meaning the alt-right, mainstream conservatism, the left, the media. I mean, frankly, outside of the alt-right, no, everyone despises him for varying reasons. So, yeah, do you think that this was an actual coordinated attack on Milo?
Well, yes and no. I think that, you know, this all started because he recently got the invitation to be the keynote speaker at CPAC. So as all these mainstream conservatives was, is the way they saw it, this alt-right guy that, you know, the sexual deviant is being given this massive platform at their biggest conference of the year. And so all they did was to just, I mean, search around and look for dirt on Milo. It was nothing more complicated,
right,
than just a few neocons. And all they had to do was to Google everything the alt-right had said about Milo, because I know that Greg Johnson had wrote an article saying he wished that Milo would go away. And that was in last September. I know the Daily Stormer, I mean, for months was going after Milo. Even by December, you know, I had posted like this video, the Joe Rogan video on my site, and I was like, look, this guy is, I was arguing with Milo's friend Vox Day. And I said, as soon as this, you know, gets out, that's going to be the end of Milo, and it's going to blow up in your face. And, you know, he argued with me, and he denounced, as he calls it, the alt-white.
Right.
He made a big distinction there, and he's like, oh, Milo is going to be number one, and the alt-right is going to be forgotten. And sure enough, it was nothing more than a few neocons had really just found all the stuff that we had circulated about Milo on our own websites for months. And they just clipped it into a video and just distributed it on Twitter, and it was shared. And I know that Cernovich was, I saw the Periscope he did, and I believe he even went on the Alex Jones show to talk about it. And they weaved this elaborate conspiracy where the deep state was taking out everybody one by one. And Cernovich actually even said that the deep state might even be trying to physically assassinate like Milo by like cutting his brakes or something. And it was
right. And I'm sure there's plenty of evidence to suggest that. Right.
Yeah. And it's these same people who like were disgusted by accusations of pedophilia and who created the whole Pizzagate narrative that the alt-light was behind that for a month until it exploded. And they pushed all that relentlessly. And they were like, this is so terrible. Look at John Podesta doing spirit cooking and all this stuff. And then they act like they're shocked that people are reacting to what's known about Milo, you know, how he bathed in blood.
Right.
How he had all these videos where he's like, yeah, I was actually at one of these Hollywood sex parties watching these very young boys having sex with Hollywood rapists. And they just can't imagine why, you know, that would be come across as so much more extreme than anything they ever found on John Podesta. So they weave this elaborate conspiracy, and it's really just ridiculous in my view.
Yeah, it is. And I think if you look behind the scenes, if we were to really know what's going on, it's, I think a lot of it would boil down to, you know, maybe to a lesser extent, personal friendships and so forth. I'm sure Cernovich, Paul Joseph Watson, and Milo get along just well. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of business interest there.
Oh.
I think they want to keep the Overton window in that very profitable, edgy, but not too edgy niche. And so that's why they're kind of sticking together on this. You see the more free thinkers in the right, for example, Stefan Molyneux came out with a video today about the whole Milo thing. I didn't get a chance to watch all of it, but from what I heard, he was quite, you know, he was perhaps a little, he was actually looking at what was being said and evaluating it. Whereas obviously Cernovich, Paul Joseph Watson, just kind of, you know, just immediately defended Milo and didn't, you know, I didn't see anything they said, really condemning, pederasty in any ways. Like Milo should have done this, but he still should keep his job. I didn't see any of that. And one thing I wanted to touch on too is that, you know, Milo's defense for all of this was essentially, you know, I was molested. He said, I was molested as a child by a Catholic priest. My way of coping with it was telling myself that I wanted it, that I wasn't actually molested, that I consented and so forth. And, yeah, and it was really disgusting on Joe Rogan's podcast. Milo essentially said, it wasn't, what was the big deal? Like I got great head or something. I mean, it's just absolutely disgusting. But my whole point is if he really was a victim, if he really, this has been something very hard for him to cope with, the proper response would be to speak out against this kind of victimization, instead of what he did, which was saying, hey, it's no big deal. Hey, you know, grown men, they have sex with boys. They bring them in. They, you know, kind of show them the ropes, so to speak. Yeah, because, I mean, he's pretty much just normalizing the whole thing, which this is not the right way to respond to, you know, the issue of child sexual abuse. And the reason I bring this up is that I haven't seen too many in the alt-light even go that far to say that. Say, hey, Milo, we like your work, but you're handling this the wrong way.
Oh, okay. One thing there. I saw that last night that Paul Joseph Watson had tweeted out that the only reason people are reacting this way, criticizing Milo, was because of homophobia. That they just hated gay people.
Right.
And that's why everybody was criticizing Milo, which is just absolutely perplexing in light of all that InfoWars, you know, was saying about Pizzagate and spirit cooking. And it's just madness. And as you were saying, this idea that Milo was the victim was really a story that he invented once he got caught. Because in the actual video, he sits there and he says that I was a sexual predator and I was the one who initiated it. And then he was boasting about it.
Yeah.
He's like, not only that, but I was actually attending these Hollywood sex parties where very young boys. Now, he did say that the age of consent should remain the same. That is a fair point. But he was celebrating it. He was quite proud of it. And then, you know, his initial response was on Facebook was, this is just retarded. And then he went into the whole woe is me act.
Right.
And it's, you know, I actually saw it and I actually felt sorry for him. And then I remembered, as I was feeling sorry for him, that all the stuff I saw on Twitter the whole year before, I remember seeing photos of Milo in bed with like three or four boys with their shirts off.
Yep.
And I've heard stories about how he had sex with people on his tour bus. And I've actually seen clips of that where they're sitting around doing these late night chat. I can't remember. Someone had posted it in my comment section, but my overwhelming impression of it was that there was a lot more there that hasn't come out yet. So by going out and claiming that I was the victim of, you know, a child molester and stuff, he's just setting the narrative so that whenever all this other stuff comes to light, whenever the first boy, as I call it, speaks out, then, you know, he's gone for good. As of right now, he's probably been knocked down to, he's lost his platform at Breitbart, but he's kind of a bigger than Cernovich brand.
Right.
He still has an enormous, his fans haven't deserted him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they will until like more and more stuff drips out. If this story continues to have legs, this is basically the way I see it.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty fair assessment too. I think, yeah, judging from what I've seen on Twitter, his fans are refusing to acknowledge that, Milo did anything wrong. Milo didn't do nothing seems to be the official line for Milo's fanboys and fangirls, I suppose. Yeah, but I mean, I think this is a good kind of point to touch on how far to the left what, you know, maybe not we in the alt-right, but what Americans consider the right to be, how far to the left conservatism and the right in America has drifted to the point where you have people like Paul Joseph Watson with, 500,000 Twitter followers, most of them right wing, most of them probably voted for Trump. And you can have someone like that pretty much alleging that, conservatives are the real homophobes. Homophobia in the mainstream conservative establishment is the reason why Milo's gone. And one thing that I brought up to him on Twitter, which was, all of these ideas, and this is a common criticism of conservatism, is all of these ideas that the alt-right champions, be it, anti-racism, homosexual acceptance and so forth. These are all things that were pretty much forced upon us by communists, essentially, during the 60s and afterwards, and these socialist, leftist, revolutions. And these people are talking, they think they're on the right wing. They think that they're against the left, but I mean, they're pretty much just the leftists of, maybe a few decades ago, minus, supporting free, free trade and capitalism and so forth.
Well, one thing that just absolutely strikes me about is I call them the alt-light syndicate, because there's a little circle of them and they all have each other's back.
Yep.
Is that, I can't think of a single one of these figures who's actually married to someone of the same race, in the opposite sex and has children.
Right.
They all seem to be deviants in some way. Like I've seen, Cernovich, right? Cernovich is married to an Iranian woman. He has a multiracial child. If you look at his old blog posts, he actually calls himself, in one of his older blog posts, a transsexual. And he calls himself a transsexual because he's done so much steroids that he's a male-to-male transsexual. It was one of the weirdest things
I've ever seen. That is quite bizarre.
And then you look at Milo, and there's really no need to elaborate there as to what Milo is.
Right.
You look at Gavin McInnes. Okay, Gavin is married to an Indian woman. He brags about how he doesn't have white children. And the thing he's most known for on the alt-right was that show he did where he put the butt plug up his butt.
Yeah.
He put a butt plug up his butt. I mean, his ass on his show. He did it. And I've heard that there's all kinds of more there from his vice days. That reminds me. I can't remember where I saw it. It was an article about Gavin McInnes, and he was commenting that things like golden showers were completely normal to New York media types like himself, but must sound so strange to people in flyover country. Okay, then you have Lucian Wintrich is another one of them who's associated with him, and he's the Twinks for Trump guy who did the photo shoot with Milo, and a really, really weird guy if you look at his Instagram page. And he was the one who got Milo to bathe in blood at the art exhibit in New York City.
Yeah.
And then moving on, even the ones you would think that are mostly normal, you look at Lauren Southern, and I have nothing against her, but I've heard that, like, the strangest story that she, like, is a sapiosexual who actually transitioned, who legally, like, changed her gender or sex or something in Canada to male. And that is just bizarre. And she's not married either. She doesn't have kids. And then there's Jim Hoft, who's the guy who runs Gateway Pundit, and he's openly gay. And then there's Bill Mitchell, who's another one who's associated with him. And he just seems of the same sort.
Yeah. I want to chime in real quick just about Lauren Southern. I think the gender thing was she did that, or at least she claims to do that. She did that as kind of a social experiment, as in she walked into whatever Canadian, government office and said, "Hey, I'm a man." And, it's still like it's kind of the attacking the low hanging fruit of, all of this gender ambiguity nonsense that the left pushes. Maybe there's something more to there. I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt and, say
one
that.
More.
Yeah, go on.
Well, before I lose my thought, Paul Joseph Watson, the biggest one of them all who has the most followers on Twitter. I remember him saying that, he had posted a selfie of himself in Prague, and he's like, I'm about to go check out the gay scene. And
the vibrant gay scene.
And then he's like, you know, on Twitter, he's like, you know, conservatives are the real homophobes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the guy's married or if he has children. I've heard conflicting stories that he's has an Asian wife, but that just seems to be a really big divide in that. You have all these people who just have non-traditional lifestyles. It's a common thread between them, something they have in common. It's why they can't completely, now, as for Stefan Molyneux, I kind of put him in a different category.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
I kind of distinguish between him and the others. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's talk about the alt-light a little bit more. And for any of our listeners who may be new and unfamiliar with what we're talking about when we say the alt-light, we're referring to, you know, the kind of the milieu that we just mentioned, Paul Joseph Watson. You know, Mike Cernovich, Gavin McGinnis, and so forth, they espouse Western values and, you know, generally they're kind of, I think libertarianism is just kind of the go-to, accessible political ideology that they espouse. But, their biggest thing, and I think the biggest issue between us and them is that, they have a huge issue with what they call identity politics. And what they're talking about is generally, you know, obviously racial or ethnic politics, having group interests, recognizing that, you know, say as a person of European heritage in America, that you have collective interests with other, you know, white Americans. So, yeah, Hunter, why do you think that the alt-right has such an issue with people acknowledging that they have ethnic or racial group interests and, you know, that these kind of identities are, you know, really just an essential part of civilization?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I've seen the whole, you know, identity politics attack line that, you know, the alt-right are just like the SJWs.
Right.
And this is a thing that I saw. As I remember reading it, and I read the conservative sites every single day, and I respond to them every day. And this whole meme that, you know, the alt-right are just like the SJWs, they're into identity politics. This was commonplace all over the mainstream conservative websites. I mean, I remember reading article after article about it at The Federalist, at National Review.
Right.
It's just a standard conservative talking point. And a lot of these alt-light people, they're not really coming at it from, as I've written about it, the perspective that we are. We're people who are interested in truth. We like to have fun. We enjoy breaking taboos, right? These people, especially if you go and you look at their backgrounds, and you look at Cernovich's background, and you look at Paul Joseph Watson's background, and You can see a trend. Like if you go back at a year ago, you know, Paul Joseph Watson was saying that Trump was a Hillary plant, and that, you know, Trump was just in there to deny Rand Paul a shot at the presidency.
Yeah.
And then you look at Cernovich's writing, and he was writing all this Manosphere stuff, and then he got into Gamergate. It was actually the same trajectory that Milo had. It was Gamergate that made Milo famous. And what's very interesting to me about this is you have people like Cernovich and Milo, and they got involved in the whole Gamergate scene, but neither one of them played video games. They had absolutely nothing to do with gaming culture. In fact, they were on record ridiculing gamers as losers. And I was listening to some guy who was involved in the Manosphere, and he was talking about Cernovich, and he mentioned how, like, by the end of it, you know, you go to Cernovich's site, and he has all these advertisements and pop up ads, and then he got into Gamergate because, you know, that was the big fad that came along. So these people are kind of like they're not principled like we are. They're seeing what's popular.
They're opportunists.
They're opportunists. They're jumping, like if Paul Joseph Watson, for example, puts out all these videos about black crime. But if you go back during the Ferguson incident, he was saying that, you know, the cops are the bad guys and that the police state was oppressing the poor blacks. Ferguson. And if you go back further than that, it was all stuff like the Illuminati and Bilderbergers, and it's all conspiracy. And InfoWars has kind of transitioned from being a, you know, the Jade Helm site that it was in 2015 to being involved in mainstream Republican politics. And that's the same trajectory that you see one by one by one. They're just following the audience.
Right.
And they're trying to, you know, they think of themselves as brands. You know, that's something that you don't ever hear the alt-right talk about. We're not brands. We're interested in the truth.
Right.
But Cernovich is a brand. And Nazi, as he explains, Nazism is bad for his brand. It might hurt his book sales. And it's just like people who are just opportunists, basically. And, you know, I hope some of them, like, come along. But I think they'll just go with whatever is popular.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a very good point. They don't really see the world in the same way that we do. You know, in the alt-right, we're identitarians, meaning that we value our ethnic, racial, and cultural identities, and we want to preserve them. But for these people, the alt-right seems to be, at least its high priests seem to be, really intent on ensuring that, you know, its adherents, their followers, don't adopt similar perspectives. They want to keep things within the realm of everyone's an atomized individual. You know, identity politics is unprincipled, or I don't know what arguments they really provide against that. But I think the greatest contradiction and the thing that people in the alt-right really need to understand is that if you take a step back and look at the alt-right, look at Western civilization overall, it becomes pretty clear that only white people care about the ideas espoused by the alt-right. And in fact, only white people really care about the alt-right. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, the alt-right is 100% white, right? It's probably somewhere around the same demographic that, you know, the same percentage white as, you know, Trump supporters, which is, you know, upwards of 90. So, I mean, that's the whole contradiction of the alt-right is they espouse a colorblind creed, but they require identity politics in the form of white nationalism to maintain the demographics necessary, you know, so that they can, you know, libertarianism, the alt-right, conservatism can live on. How do you feel about that?
I think I have an explanation for how the whole alt-right got started. And the answer is that it's an economy in that, like, you'll see Paul Joseph Watson and he'll be like, oh, we can't have identity politics. The new right is against identity politics. And it's bad, or Milo will say it's bad for people to identify with their race. And then at the same time, when some white Trump supporter is getting tortured in Chicago, they're pushing this hashtag. And it's all like, you know, look at this black on white atrocity. And the reason they're doing that is because there's such a huge audience for that. And then they'll go on, all these people will go on their Twitter account and retweet them and like them and visit their pages. And then they get what Cernovich calls engagement and they make money off of it.
Right.
And the reason they don't, and it's, I don't even really think they have any core beliefs. They want to stay within the mainstream. They don't want to go too far because in doing so, you know, that would narrow their market.
Yeah.
And that's why. You're asking yourself, why doesn't this make any sense? Why is Breitbart, for example, pushing like refugee crisis, black on white crime,
right?
One horror story after another, the kind of stuff that you used to see on sites like Stormfront, Council of Conservative Citizens. Why are all these conservative sites that, you know, we're all individuals, they're pushing this? And they're pushing this because it gets clicks, it generates revenue. They make a living off of it. They're economically motivated, not like morally like we are.
Yeah, they're not idealists. That's a pretty big criticism that Richard Spencer levels at, you know, most of those in the alt-right. when Mike Cernovich called Richard Spencer a Fed for raising his glass in a toast. Yeah, but I think Richard said it pretty well. Like, what does Mike Cernovich believe in? What are his politics? What are his values? We hear, we hear him criticizing the left and, you know, supporting Donald Trump. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. These people are opportunists. They're not idealist. And that's something that, you know, people in the alt-right need to understand. You know, we might all be supporting Trump, and that's great. But, you know, these high priests of the alt-right, they're not primarily concerned with the truth or with, you know, saving the West. If they're able to tell the truth and save the West while lining their pockets, then sure, I'm sure that makes them feel great. But the people that you want to be leading and the people that you want to be getting your information from are not those that are trying to peddle things to you. Not people that are only going to tell you half of the truth and then try to sell you a supplement. But I think
that's what they do at InfoWars.
Yeah, exactly. That's not hyperbole. They literally try to
something.
Yeah, the super male vitality.
Yeah, super male vitality, water filtration system.
Right.
very
lucrative niche to be in. Yeah, and then of course Cernovich started peddling these nootropics, these sketchy blue pills. Thankfully, people in the alt-right have been memeing that to death.
Yeah.
I guess the whole point with that is that we have to be very, on the one hand, we're all united against the left. And I think that we do need to kind of keep that in mind. If it does come to the streets and there's some massive civil unrest, it's not going to be the alt-right versus the left. It's going to be Trump supporters versus the left. And I do think that most people in the alt-right, as far as the average alt-right supporter, not the people at the top, I think they are sincere and I think they are looking for truth. Mm-hmm. And they're definitely headed in the right direction.
I would distinguish between, as I call them, the brands.
Yeah,
a brand would be like Malo or Cernovich or Paul Joseph Watson, and the average ordinary person who's following them because they're being exposed to the truth for the first time, and I mean they're just putting it out there because that's the red meat that drives the clicks. But the average person who's following them is who's a moderate, isn't like they are, is how I would say.
Yeah, absolutely, and the alt-right really is just kind of the end conclusion of this whole awakening that's taking place. So I am very optimistic about pretty much all people of European heritage in the alt-right eventually making their way over to us. I like to see it as just a matter of time, and realistically, a lot of them aren't going to do that. Not everyone's going to become alt-right, but that's okay. But in my organization, Identity Europa, we've had a number of former Proud Boys who have, joined up. They liked what Gavin was doing. He was supporting Trump. He was helping building community. And, some of the things that he espouses for, his Proud Boys are, somewhat traditional. They're better than, the average values promulgated by the media here in Y-America. I think he tries to get his Proud Boys to, stop watching porn, think about getting married, those kinds of things. I mean, it's all kind of pretty basic stuff. But, all of these former Proud Boys have told me, they ended up, it was just a matter of time until they found Richard Spencer, who, to his credit, Gavin did have on his show. But, these people aren't going to be satisfied with the alt-right forever. It's just a matter of time until they start looking, to alt-right.com, Occidental Descent, Red Ice, and so forth.
But, while we're talking about Gavin, one little quick point. A buddy of mine I've known for years, he actually got involved with the Proud Boys. And he was sending me the other day some unbelievable screenshots. Apparently, they have a Facebook group. And, I've not been into the group. I haven't seen any of that. I'm only reacting to the Gavin I see on television. But he was sending me all these screenshots of Gavin, saying this and that inside the group, rule number one is you can't say anything about race, and number two about Jews, and nothing about Nazis.
Yeah.
And And he was like
free
chastising
speech, right?
People. He was chastising people within the forum because they were alienating the black members. And apparently there's this black member in the Proud Boys who's Gavin's favorite. Or that's the impression I got from seeing the screenshots. And he actually drummed my friend out of the group.
Yeah.
I haven't posted anything about that, but it's just changed my opinion of him.
Yep, you're only going to be able to do that for so long. People are going to start asking, why can't I look into race? Why can't I look into Jewish influence and so forth? I believe it was Greg Johnson that summed it up pretty perfectly. If someone's telling you not to look at something, like hey, don't look into that, they might have something to hide. That doesn't necessarily mean Gavin McGinnis has something to hide on those fronts, but as we talked about earlier. They want to keep things in that edgy but not too edgy niche so that they can get clicks and peddle their nootropics and male supplements. But
that's precisely it.
Definitely. Well, yeah, that was definitely a very good kind of discussion on the alt-light. Definitely very salient at this point. Why don't we transition to talk about Donald Trump's recent comments on Sweden? So while at a rally on Saturday, Donald Trump said the following. He said, "You look at what's happening in Germany. You look at what's happening last night in Sweden. Sweden, who would believe this? Sweden, they took in large numbers. They're having problems like they never thought possible." So he was apparently referring to a report he saw on Fox News the night prior. So the worst that he can really be faulted for here is kind of maybe a clumsy choice of words. But the media, went crazy, and they were all, almost every mainstream media article I saw talking about this. They were claiming that Trump said that there was a terror attack the night before, and they specifically used the words terror attack, despite Trump never having uttered them. So what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, they thought they had caught President Trump in a gaffe and was trying to manufacture a narrative that was completely false, that he said there had been a terror attack, when he was just referring to the show that he saw on Tucker Carlson Tonight. And that actually featured a segment from a documentary called Stockholm Syndrome by the Jewish filmmaker Amy Horowitz, who's been over there touring. He toured a no-go zones, got knocked out, and was threatened. And anyway, so Amy Horowitz is on Tucker explaining that, and that's how President Trump heard it. But what's interesting is that even before that, in the weeks prior to that being on the show, it had kind of come up the food chain, and that Stefan Molyneux had made a big popular video about it, the rapes in Sweden. Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show had been interviewing people about the refugee crisis in Sweden. And, as I pointed out, there was a bunch of videos and on YouTube, and there was a lot of discussion going on in the alt-light conspiracy world. And even before that, the alt-right was talking about the refugee crisis in Sweden and how political correctness is. So it literally went all the way up the food chain from the alt-right and white nationalists to the alt-light, and from them to the edgiest mainstream conservatism, which would be the Tucker Carlson Show. And then it went up there from him to, Breitbart and the president. So it's just how that happened over the last month is a really amazing and instructive story. The lesson of it is that the writing we do, the podcasts and conversations we have, influence the brands, as we call them.
Absolutely.
And then the people who run Daily Caller and Tucker Carlson Tonight and all these other Breitbart, they see that material and they pick it up, and that drives the news cycle. Then it goes all the way up to the highest levels of the government now.
Absolutely. And you know what that really shows is that the kind of the monopoly on the dissemination of information and the creation of culture is really that the mainstream media formerly had and still does kind of have to a certain point is being lessened. And I think that's one thing that, the rise of the alt-right and to a lesser extent, the alt-light really shows is that the media doesn't really have the ability to manufacture consensus as it used to, which is definitely a very good thing for us. So, yeah, and then obviously a few days later, on Tuesday, Trump was proven correct pretty much about Sweden. I was hoping that, well, okay, maybe hoping isn't the right word. I was figuring that, you know, at some point after Trump saying that, it was just a matter of time until there was going to be something in Sweden, be it a terrorist attack, you know, a rape fest or rape epidemic or whatever. But it was only a few days. On Tuesday, it was reported that there were riots in Sweden. Cars were set aflame. Small businesses were looted. Rocks were thrown at cops. This is a perfect example of what Steve Saylor referred to as Trump's luck, which was pretty much a phenomenon wherein Trump would say something seemingly outrageous about a problem with Islam or illegal immigration or so forth, only to be later validated, just a few days later. And, obviously that was the case with Brussels. It's very tragic stuff, but, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, he predicted the Brussels terrorist attack, and the New York Times was laughing at him and mocking him, saying, yo, what had happened in Brussels? And 2 months later, you had the terrorist attack. For all along the campaign trail, President Trump had criticized France and criticized Germany and Angela Merkel, especially for the immigration and the refugee issues. And then you have something like the Berlin Christmas market attacks. Right. You have the year before, or the January before, you had the sexual assaults in Cologne. You had, it seems like, Nice. You had the priest who had his throat cut in France.
Mm-hmm.
All these things happen. And of course, there's more coming down the road. There's going to be more of these attacks over the next year. And what's amazing about it is that on alt-right.com, I had written this huge post and had linked to like 15 videos of everything that was going on in Sweden. And there's a guy over there, he has a YouTube channel called The Angry Foreigner.
Yeah.
He put out a video that's like the truth about Sweden. And he's going through it and everything that's happened over there, talking about a woman who was gang raped in a wheelchair in a restroom, and a teenager who was raped and sodomized. And I think the perpetrator got 2 months in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd compiled this huge post about it, and it was linked to on VDare, and it was getting a lot of traffic. And literally, like a few hours later, I was getting messages and people were saying, "Have you seen what's going on in Sweden?" I'm like, "No, what are you talking about?" And it's like, "There's riots." It's like, really? And I was like, "Really? I'm going to have to write about this all over again?"
Yeah.
Sure enough, it actually mocked the New York Times. And I pointed out how just as they were saying that you can't trust President Trump, the lying press, as if on cue, the riots break out in Sweden. And I read an editorial by Rich Lowry in National Review this morning, and the starting words is "as if on cue," like the riots start. It's just unbelievable, foresight on the behalf of the president. What luck, to completely destroy their narrative like that and set them up.
Right, right. The timing couldn't have been more perfect. And in fact, the opportune timing of him saying that on Saturday and then, just a few days later on Tuesday, the riots happened, was apparently cause for suspicion and conspiracy theorizing from the left. I saw a few people on Twitter, including one gentleman whose name escapes me. He's he was a Berkeley professor, pretty well-known guy. And yeah,
that was him. Yeah.
And he, what was his tweet? He deleted it, but it was pretty much something hinting at, Trump's words having consequences. So I'm not sure if he was implying that, Trump caused these migrants to riot. Elsewhere I've seen, people, unironically arguing that, Trump may have set up these riots, maybe using Putin's money. Who knows what they're thinking.
Well, we forgot to, I can't believe we actually forgot to bring up the incident that sparked this latest Sweden. The policeman over there who was being investigated for posting on Facebook.
Yeah.
about the, we forgot to bring that up. That's what, you know, I guess sparked all the interest. Initially on InfoWars and Breitbart. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of like set all this, I think, in motion. And they were, you know, giving them flowers and they were delivering flowers to the police station. And the police station says, you can't like put the flowers here. And they were calling it the Swedish Spring. There's a lot of stuff that's been, and then you had the whole PewDiePie thing right on top of it this month. So we've been talking about Sweden for a month now.
Yeah, definitely. And if you look at the kind of stuff that they push in Sweden, you know, the kind of the cultural Marxist conditioning seems to be very, I don't know if I don't know why, but for some reason, Sweden seems to be worse off in many ways. You know, as far as outright terrorism, they haven't had as much as other areas, you know, such as France, for example, Germany. But the cultural poisoning seems to be more further along there. You know, obviously you have Barbara Spector, who pretty much admitted that, you know, Jews are playing a large role in reducing the West from its former glory through mass third world immigration. You've had just all kinds of, you know, transgender, LGBT, you know, just very, you know, feminist brainwashing, you know, aimed at the children to, you know, make the men weak, make the women, you know, unruly and masculine. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's just really just a matter of time until Sweden really starts experiencing, you know, full-blown Islamic terrorism. Up until now, their problem has largely been rape. Sweden is essentially the rape capital of the West. It has rape, rates of rape as high as many, you know, war-torn African nations, which really says it all. And of course, the counterpoint to that that liberals will always make is that Sweden has very strict immigration or strict rape laws, meaning that, you know, if you have sex mm-hmm. with a girl without using a condom and she's upset with it later, that can be rape, you know, things like that. But the big point that you have to, that needs to be made about all of these statistics is that they're intentionally obfuscated. Second generation non-whites in Sweden are counted as normal, you know, normal Swedes. I think it was around 2005 when the Swedish government started really putting a lid on everything that's going on over there. But, you know, there is a lot of evidence from Sweden that still supports, you know, foreigners committing disproportionate amount of crimes. And the fact that that's even remotely controversial is just speaks to the level of lunacy the left is exhibiting. You know, from pretty much every other country in the West, we know that, you know, these non-white immigrants are the ones generally committing the most crimes.
And I got an excellent point to jump off on this. Most amazing thing about it, you know, the left will say, oh, these cultural differences don't matter. These racial differences don't matter. Well, look at the state of Minnesota. All right. That's where all these Scandinavians who actually came over there from the old country, from Sweden, from Finland, Norway, from Denmark. They settled in, you know, the Dakotas and especially Minnesota. And there's a lot of them in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And it just so happens that that is the place that has the worst refugee problem in the entire United States. In that, like, the Minneapolis, St. Paul area has imported all these Somalians and, you know, they haven't assimilated. And a few months back, I don't know if you saw it, one of them went on a rampage in a mall and stabbed people to death in St. Cloud, Minnesota. And so what's remarkable about it is that you bring the Somalians over from Africa and they're Somalians. You bring the Swedes and the Danes and the Norwegians over, they settle in Minnesota, and you have the same white guilt problem. You have the same refugee. It's amazing how like it's just completely reproduced itself, even in the New World. That's how strong I guess race and culture, the pull of race and culture is.
Yeah, that's definitely a very good point. And another point too, just on that subject, is that, you know, assimilation is obviously possible, you know, to a certain extent, but when you're bringing in tens and tens of thousands, or in the case of Germany, you know, millions of people from a particular region, a group of regions, and they're coming into a country and they're immediately going to neighborhoods wherein that are, you know, little more than ethnic enclaves for their own groups. They're not going to lose their identities and they're not going to assimilate. And that kind of that us and them mentality, that friend foe distinction, as Carl Schmitt would say, you know, existing so prevalently within a society is really just grounds for all kinds of ethnic conflict. And, you know, if people bothered to actually look at the research from sociology, political science, and anthropology, they would find research such as Robert Putnam's and indeed many others who proved that, or at least demonstrated very sufficiently, that more diversity and more multiculturalism lead to lower levels of trust. Mm-hmm. They lead to all sorts of ethnic conflict. And obviously there are going to be differences in IQ, and group success is largely correlated to, you know, average IQs. So there's going to be racial stratification. You're going to have people that are just not able to, you know, succeed as well as others. You know, for example, in Germany, I believe out of the million, non-white, you know, migrants, I'm loathe to call them refugees. These migrants that came into Germany, between, you know, around 2015, 2016, it's less than like 50 that have been employed. And I believe the statistic in Sweden was out of 150,000, it was something similar, like, you know, 30, 40 of them are employed. So the point being is that, all of this is very indefensible unless you just hate the West and you have a moral imperative to kind of ensure that white people don't get to have homelands and don't get to enjoy, you know, pretty much the fruits of their forefathers' labors. But yeah, all right, Hunter, we definitely have a lot more to talk about, including, you know, the deep state war against Trump, Michael mm-hmm. Flynn's replacement, H.R. McMaster, you know, and the future of the alt-right overall. But I think now would be a good time to take a break. Before we do, why don't you tell everyone again where they can find your work?
Okay. You can check me out at OccidentalDescent.com, which is my main blog, and OCC Descent on Twitter, OCC Descent on Twitter. And I post to AltRight.com and ConservativeHeadlines.org. So those are the three places I post new material on a daily basis.
Awesome. Yeah, everyone, be sure to check out Hunter's work at the places that he mentioned, and obviously we'll have links at the bottom of the show. So for now, we're going to take a quick break, but please do stay with us for the members segment, as we still have a lot more to discuss, and we'll be right back.
And when he put his arms around her, smile, there's fierce as a 40-pound. sandy